Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. We are the Bella Lost Souls podcast. It's episode 193. I'm joined today by Ricky Addington and Chris Morgan.
Hey!
Thou P for Power Fist.
Guys, welcome to the show, man. I know it's only been a week since we did the last show, but it is, like, how much stuff have we gotten? Like, we were talking before the show, where do we even start to cover?
It's a blur.
Yeah, there's just so much. I think my phone is just about ready to, like, leave and go on vacation because the notifications are getting out of hand.
Google now has Warhammer Community set as my most visited website on my homepage there, so that's that good. Could be a sign.
It makes it easier to get there, you know?
It's very convenient.
I'm not far off, honestly, from that.
I've been doing some reaction videos on YouTube. The Forge Narrative YouTube page is active again, if you are not aware of that. We're doing almost daily videos that are in a response to the information we're getting from the Warhammer community site and their folks' Facebook page and their property. And then as we move forward, we're going to be doing our own faction focuses and little five-minute tactics and stuff as we start to digest the new edition when we get it in our hands.
Yeah, and thankfully for you guys, we don't all have faces just made for radio, so.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. You know, the comment section's actually been cool. There's a really cool community on the FTN YouTube page, Forge Narrative. It's youtube.com/ForgeNarrative something. You'll find it, whatever. But the comments and stuff, they've been good. It's everyone, you know, helping people out, finding people where the information goes. Some healthy debates over the effectiveness of certain weapons and that kind of stuff. But hey, whatever. That's what we come here for.
Exactly. I mean, we're all about just brainstorming, getting things out there. And it's so hard right now, right, guys? Just because we lack so much context.
We're looking at it and everything is good. You know, that's the thing. It's like we'll talk about the Hellforge Leviathan Dreadnought here in a minute. But
it's good. Real good.
Right. But everything we've seen has been good because but a part of that is either it's just when everything is good, but then we don't know what's efficient and what's not efficient because we're looking at everything very much in a bubble or in its own vacuum.
Yeah, well, yep. I mean, you know, we don't have context for half of it, and we don't have points for the other half. So in our minds, it's all amazing, and I'm okay with that. I'm going to ride this hype train until it comes to the station.
Can we talk about the Hellforge Leviathan here for a minute?
I'd be offended if we didn't.
Well, starting out, it's power level 16, which is, what is it? It's double what we've seen from the Rubric Marines, right?
Yep.
And what is it? It's almost triple what we've seen from a squad of Primaris Marines.
Well, you know what its real 16 value is?
No, the strength.
The strength. That thing is going to wreck face.
Let's shelve that for just a minute because I have something I'd like to mention about the numbers of this game in just a minute, if that's okay.
It's your show, Paul.
Well, I just want to look at the power level itself because do we think that this is going to be triple the points of a Primaris Marine squad? It is a lot of points in 40K 7th edition right now.
I mean, yeah. I think it is. Just if you look at the dang the soul burner, I'm not going to try to say that, but I mean, come on, 2d3 mortal wounds for every hit right there. I mean, yeah, it's definitely going to be worth the points.
You have to figure, okay, so this thing, it has strength 8, as we covered, toughness 8, wounds 14, 4 attacks, lead 8, and a 2+ save. It has this damage table, which we're all going to get familiar with. It doesn't lose any effectiveness until you do half of its wounds.
It's just like, it's basically the Bane from Batman of Dreadnoughts.
Now
it's just big and top heavy and
yeah, it goes downhill fast. I shouldn't say downhill fast. Once you do 7 wounds to it, its movement drops from 8 to 5. Its weapon skill and a ballistic skill target number goes from 2 to 3. This thing right off the line hits on 2s on both the weapon skill and ballistic skill.
And, you know, for those of us who play 30K and know the ballistic skill of some of the better dreadnoughts there, like the Contemptors will usually hit on 2s when they're shooting. You know, they've got a weapon skill of 5 as well. So I'm not terribly surprised that this thing hits like a truck when it gets there.
Being something that has the toughness 8, I think that's a good step up representing the higher armor value, the 13 armor value or whatever it has, which means to me that Ironclad and Venerable Dreads may get that toughness 8 bump.
Furiosos, That would be ideal as well. And I was actually thinking about that just because the toughness 8 means that your generic infantry weapons, it's going to be double their strength. So it's only going to be wounded on 6s, which is the best possible result.
With a 2+ armor save.
That you can hope for. And well, if it's anything like a Leviathan now in terms of survivability and things like that, it's going to have some invulnerable saves or something in there, perhaps even a feel no pain type mechanic, because a lot of the dreadnoughts that have those abilities that ignore like the shaken and stunned, those aren't going to matter anymore. So what do they replace that with?
Well, I mean, it's got this one has the 5+ against shooting and then the 4+ against melee. So that's huge.
That's invulnerable saves.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Not even counting its, you know, what it's got. It's armor save.
We often leave that part out of the discussion. I shouldn't say we leave it. It's, I don't think we give it enough attention, is that even vehicles now and walkers and whatever will have an armor save in addition to their high toughness values.
Yeah, it's huge. And I'm not even concerned, you know, we kind of, you know, skimmed over the fact that, like, you know, it's movement 8 inches, 5 inches, 3 inches. So, like, once it takes half of its damage, it's still moving just 1 inch slower than it would have in 7th edition. So, you know, I ain't worried about it even taking that much damage, because by the time it's down to half of its wounds, it's probably going to be there in your face already, hitting you hard, like really hard. Like, should call your mother and, you know, vent about it.
Let's talk about how hard this thing hits. And that will lead us into that kind of point, the value the value discussion that I was talking about before. It comes with the melee weapons. It comes with 2 Hellforged Siege Claws and 2 Melted Guns and 2 Bale Flamers. You can then sub those out for different weapons, and we'll talk about them in a minute. But both of its melee weapons are x2 strength. And let's remember, there is no cap anymore. So the x2 strength off of its strength 8 is a strength, you know, a million.
The math to the nth degree, strong 5 out of 5 would recommend to fight Rocky Balboa.
So here's my question: why would you take the Hellforged Siege Claw over the Siege Drill? Is there something I'm not seeing there?
The Drill does 4 damage and has a -4 armor save.
Yep, and the Claw
is 3 damage and a minus three.
So where is the advantage of the Claw? You see what I'm saying?
I imagine
is there something I'm missing.
What we're missing here is the point cost for each upgrade. And I think that's where the discerning customer is going to choose between the Claw and the Drill. It may also have something to do with built-in weapons.
Oh, there it is. I'm looking around. The Claw has the Melted Gun, right? Yeah. It's got a Melted Gun built into the Claws.
Which a Melted Gun does not suck, especially when you're up close, because you've got that D6 damage at a -4 to the opponent's armor save. And if you're within half distance, you roll 2 dice and pick the highest. So, there's definitely value in that.
But the Melt-A-Gun, how kind of weird is it that the Melt-A-Gun, with all that power now in this edition, is probably the lamest weapon on this thing?
It really is. Man, that's a... Yeah, that'll mess with your head.
Sorry, it's not the Bell Flamer, it's the Hell Flamer, and it's a heavy D6, strength 5, -1 AP, 2 damage weapon that automatically hits. So it's a heavy D6, damage 2 weapon that automatically hits at an 8-inch range. That thing's so beastly.
Suddenly, our 2-wound Terminators are not liking this idea very much of a Flamer that makes them armor save on a 3+. And we'll kill them outright.
Yeah, and let me talk about this strength 16 for a second. With the beauty of us abandoning that 10x10 chart of strength versus toughness, the numbers, you can have high numbers. Like, it wouldn't matter if this guy's toughness was 10,000, because he could still be affected by things in the game. It would just affect what is that 5 and what is that 6.
Right.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it with the Imperial Knights. That's somewhere where I'm looking forward to it. Basically, just kind of looking at this, thinking about how it would play, and then seeing it on a bigger scale with the Knights, and just a lot more dynamic play that we're going to see out of vehicles now, instead of just park them somewhere and hope they don't get killed before they get locked into combat with something that can't hurt them.
Well, I mean, let's take a look at this for a second. With strength, just coming out the gate here, knowing that the strength can be 16, and knowing that things aren't capped at 10 anymore, things like knights and land raiders could have a toughness of 12, of 13, or 14, or whatever. And I'm not saying that they will. I'm just saying that things could exist in the game like that. and it wouldn't seem so bad. Or
Knight Errant only has a toughness of 8.
This thing could be really great at killing knights, and that's or killing things like that, and that's why you take it. And that's actually what he's built for.
Yeah, I mean, they're both toughness 8. They're both strength 8. I mean, honestly, the Hellforge Leviathan is just as strong as a knight and just as tough as a knight. It's got 10 less wounds, but it's 9 power points less too. So
all these numbers, all these big numbers, having no cap on the numbers, give them such room to create these evocative stats that aren't limited to what they had before. And before they were, I didn't realize it, that they were so limited. And maybe that's why certain things, you know, I want to say sucked, but definitely weren't as efficient, because they were playing with all these built-in limitations with how they created the stats.
Yeah. And that made the D6 not as versatile as it can be as far as rolling dice go, because they kind of locked themselves into this very tight little room to play with, and now it's kind of, they've unleashed themselves and they can really just kind of go wherever they want with these units.
Well, and think about it from a different perspective as well, because anybody who's played with Dreadnoughts or any kind of vehicle ever has always played that game where, all right, I want my butt facing or touching the edge of the table, if at all possible. Like, there's always this cagey way, and you're always dealing with this inner anxiety about, all right, well, if I face it this way, are those jet bikes going to zoom in behind and then shoot out their butts to shoot up my butt? Like, that's not an issue anymore.
That was a lot of butt stuff there, Chris, but you're absolutely right.
Drifting of every single
yep.
The most underappreciated Fast and Furious movie, one of my favorites. But
I liked it.
It was great.
Had good music in it.
No comment.
Actually, it did. Chris, admit it. It was fantastic. Anyway, I completely lost my train of thought. My Lion's Blade. I was running a Lion's Blade, and I had a Dreadnought in there, and that dude was he was hero to zero real quick, but I loved having him in there because there was a few instances where he was super useful, and he felt like a Dreadnought, you know, and it was like so cool. And then there were the other games where he just got shot off the table as soon as he hit in his pod. And so now my Dreadnoughts are going to feel like Dreadnoughts every game, and it's going to be amazing. I don't care if they're like the most amazing unit out there, but they're going to feel like they should now. And
Well, let's talk about these awesome weapons here. The Butcher Cannon Array. We talked about the Hellflamer first, and so now in the Butcher Cannon Array, it's strength 8 with a -1 to AP. It does 2 damage apiece. 36 inches, heavy 8. If a unit has any model slain by any Butcher Cannon in the shooting phase, the unit subtracts -2 from its leadership for the rest of the turn.
That's so brutal. Oh, man.
It's going to be huge for, I want to say Battle Shock, but for Morautists.
That -2, man. I mean, this is the difference in between losing a squad, you know, and not.
Yeah, a bad roll. I mean, it's almost like, you know, you roll poorly on that, and that's 2 additional dead, you know, Marines right there.
That could be dead Centurions. I mean, you remove models. You remove models for them. That's 2 dead Thunderwolves.
Yeah. And one thing to keep in mind also is this gun is basically the Sunder weapon that they used to have. You know, Sunder in 7th edition is great because it lets you reroll the armor pen and armor value, like void shields, things like that. So if Sunder is now turning into a leadership modifier like that across the board, oh my gosh, that is so good.
We haven't necessarily mentioned this either, but like Chaos didn't get Leviathan Dreadnoughts until this data slate.
Yeah, not in 40K. That's right.
Yeah. So this is big for Chaos, and I think we'll see more of these things because the Butcher Cannon is on the, what is it? It's not the Deceiver Dreadnought, the Decimator.
Is that the big triangular looking one?
Yeah, I think.
The one that skipped leg day?
Yes. That guy. Okay, yeah. Continue. I know what we're talking about.
And then like the Mauler Fiends. I mean, I know it's not the Decimator. I'm sorry, the Butcher Cannons, but they've got their own, you know, big lot of shot cannons. So these, you know, these seem similar to me, but with that heavy 8, I'm pretty sure you're going to get a wound or 2 on a unit.
Dude, 36 inches away, you're hitting on what, 2s?
Yeah.
8 shots, you're going to hit with what, 7?
Neg 1 to save, and it does 2 wounds per hit, or per wound.
Yeah.
Damage 2. We should probably get it's a damage 2 weapon.
It's going to make a tactical squad disappear. I mean,
Jet Bike Squad's going away.
Yeah.
I have to imagine almost any like bubble wrap unit is also probably going to, you know, have a bad
especially
day.
Especially like if you this is great for shooting low leadership units. You know, Marines are pretty solid, and I imagine Marines are going to have some good leadership benefits. I mean, they're Marines, but
if I had to guess, Initial No Fear will give them a reroll.
Something, yeah. But I mean, imagine this on like some Fire Warriors. You know, bye.
You know, we're already hearing about armies that can mitigate the morale checks. You know, Tyranids within Synapse, and you have to imagine that Guard with Orders or Commissars are going to be able to do things like that. And characters are going to be able to give their, you know, there's going to be all way different ways to mitigate it, but we still know it's going to be a big thing. There will be, I don't think every army or every unit's going to be able to benefit from the morale mitigation.
Yeah, and that's good. You know, we don't want every one of them mitigating it completely. But, you know, it's been a staple of the Marines to be able to mitigate those morale issues. Obviously, they're going to have to play, you know, this edition, Marines are going to have to deal with leadership a lot more. They've said that from day one. So hopefully they still get something that lets them, you know, mitigate it to an extent. But
all the Tyranny players out there right now just don't even care. they don't even care about all this.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Like, that's what it should be. Tyranids should not make a morale check if they're in Synapse. I don't care if it's broken. I don't care if Tyranids win every single tournament, because if anybody deserves it, it's those players that have stuck with Tyranids for the past two editions.
I'm willing to bet that any Horde army that is in the hundreds of figure range is going to have a way to lessen the effects of morale. But let's keep going here. So the Soulburner Robotkin is heavy 2d3, one damage, but it does mortal wounds.
Mm-hmm.
On hits.
Just has to hit.
Each successful hit roll made with this weapon inflicts a mortal wound instead of a normal damage.
So that's 2d3.
Hitting on twos.
In my opinion, that one is going to be a great like character. You know, that's going to be like your assassination tool right there.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like it.
You're going to have to play aggressive with that. And I think that the shorter range, the 18-inch range, is a good move on their part. It's because 18 inches is a significant threat range now.
Well, it's also 18 plus its movement of 8.
Right. But if you're going to move up to be in range of that, chances are the other, you know, the enemy is going to be able to engage with you really quickly.
Fair.
Well, that needs to happen. You know, if you're pumping mortal wounds out, I mean, we've seen that in Sigmar, you know, units that can sit back and throw mortal wounds downrange with, you know, without being threatened, are very good in Age of Sigmar. So I'm happy to see that this isn't, you know, some 30-inch, you know, ranged gun. You know, it's with 18 inches, it's do you take the risk and push up there to kill that model, or do you hold back a little? I like it.
I think we're focusing a lot on this one thing, but there's a lot going on here in this data slate. And I think that these weapons, especially the one we're going to talk about, may be things that we see going forward about how things are handled. Like this Graflux Bombard. It's another 18-inch range weapon, heavy D3, strength 9, with a -5 to save. That means 2+ armor save? Nobody cares. Damage 2 weapon. And then here, let me get the special rules out. Is that the target, if the target model has monster, vehicle, or titanic keyword, then the amount of damage inflicted by the weapon becomes 5 per hit for every 5 models in the target unit at D3 to the number of attacks made by this weapon.
That is the most terrifying anti-tank weapon I've seen yet. I mean, that is stupid good.
Strength 9. I think this is
an indication of what we can expect Grav to be. I know a lot of people are talking about, oh, well, they're going to nerf Grav. They've got to nerf Grav. Well, I think it's less about nerfing Grav and more about making everything else also appealing. And
well, that's what they said. Yeah.
That's what we're seeing on this data sheet is that the Butcher Cannon Array is something that sounds great. It does a job and it does it well, especially for leadership. The Mortal Wounds one does a good job. Now, this Graflux Bombard, like, you could kit this thing out to do several jobs.
Yeah, you can't take all the weapons. You have to make a choice when you take this, which arms you're going to sub out. You can't have all the weapons.
Right.
Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. The main point of that is, though, is that this is not a one-trick pony. This is not a unit, and I hope that this stays true for all the other units out there that we're going to see coming the next few weeks. This is not a unit that you automatically look at as like, okay, I'm taking a Leviathan. That means I'm taking the Graflux Bombard and a claw every time. don't even have to think about it. That's not what I want to see. This is the kind of walker that you can decide, well, in my area, I'm facing a lot of low leadership hordes, so I'm going to use the Butcher Cannon Array. You know, there's...
Fair.
Well, the
thing about it that makes it really awesome is, just think about it as like, you know, hey, I love that Leviathan model, but it doesn't do what I want it to do, you know, in my army. Well, now every option on this is super attractive.
It and seems so to have a purpose. Now, if this thing is 5,000 points, then maybe it's inefficient. But on the surface here, it looks
unless
like,
it's like a 500,000 point game.
Well, I mean, just on the surface here, it looks like this is something you could work into your army. And going down to the, it even can heal itself in close combat for every model it slays, or you roll a 5. If you roll a D6 and on a 5 plus, it gets a wound back. So, you know, maybe it goes down to 7 wounds and it just pops right back up. You know, go back to full efficiency. It does have the invulnerable save, 5+ invulnerable save against shooting or overwatch, and a 4+ invulnerable save against melee attacks. So you definitely want this thing to be in combat. You're not scared. You think can fight anything because it's got an invulnerable save.
Yep, and invulnerable save is a big deal because that's the only thing that's going to protect you from stuff like another grav flux bombard or, you know.
This is one of those rules also. The containment breach, it blows up, and it does, you know, if you kill the thing, it blows up around it. Below that, this rule Dark Fury, this is another one of those little kind of like sprinkle in teaser things we keep talking about. It says if this model is equipped with 2 melee weapons, it gains +1 attack. You know, that means, as we suspect, that the 2 close combat weapons don't automatically give you the extra attack anymore.
That's what I've come to understand just from what we know so far.
Now, that's just, I mean, again, we're taking bits and pieces here and there, Facebook comments, what we've seen, you know, we haven't seen the real rule. That could be, you know, maybe if you have 2 swords or something, you're getting the +1 attack. We don't know. But this thing getting a specific rule that says if it has 2 melee weapons, it gets +1 attack, leads me to believe that's not as common anymore.
Yeah, what we've seen in Sigmar is typically if you're dual wielding weapons, you'll get to reroll ones to hit. So maybe that will make its way over into 40K. I'd be fine with that rule as well. So yeah, I like it. This guy's getting the +1 attack, but I think I'm okay with dual wielding weapons getting a reroll.
It's one of those things, Ricky, that allows them to give, like, if a Howling Banshee is a unit that gets the benefit of an extra attack for having 2 weapons, then that gives them more, that makes them more valuable.
Yeah.
It gives them another slider to mess with if that's the case. So the faction keywords, this is very interesting because there's Chaos, Mark of Chaos, that's in brackets, and then Heretic Astartes, Legion. So that leads me to believe that you can pick the Mark of Chaos for it, pick your Legion, and they may have special rules that apply on top of this already impressive stat line.
Yeah, I mean, that's a given right there, isn't it? I mean, There's no way they would not let Chaos pick their marks in their Legion.
I'm just pointing out the modular section, the keywords here, because then it goes in. That's the faction keywords, and then there are the base keywords, which are Vehicle, Dreadnought, Hellforged, and then Hellforged Leviathan Dreadnought. It's its own keyword.
Yeah, I think that those are very deliberate and very specific for a reason. And they've already talked about how when you're doing your army composition, like armies of the Imperium will get access to the Imperium army, the stratagems. But if you're Imperium Space Marines and it's all Astartes, then you get the Astartes ones too. And if you're all from the same chapter, you get Imperium, Astartes, and those specific to your chapter. So I think that we're going to see a similar thing in the keywords for things like this Leviathan Dreadnought. I'm sure that certain legions are going to prohibit or discourage certain marks, you know, mutually exclusive items, things like that.
I wonder if they'll do the marks just like, you know, if everything has this mark, you get these command points or you know, these stratagems. I wonder if they're going to get stratagems based off of their marks and which god they're following.
I commit. I'll be all Death Guard all the time.
I might have some Death Guard people for you out of the starter box because I ain't using that junk.
Death Guard makes the worst cosplay.
those Death Guard look awesome. I mean, I know that we talked a lot about the Primaris Marines, but those Death Guard look very impressive. They are the best Death Guard I think we've ever gotten, and that's coming off the back of already having very, very nice Death Guard models.
Yeah, it doesn't do it for me. I don't understand the appeal of looking sick and gross all the time. But I will admit that the artistic skill involved in creating those kits is phenomenal.
That was like the politician line right there.
No, like because I respect the skill, but I just don't like that aesthetic.
No, like I don't want to be thinking about, you know, puss and vomit while I'm painting my models. You know, not really my thing.
That's what I'm thinking about no matter what I'm painting.
You need to lay off the booze while you're painting, man.
Oh, man, I cannot wait to get them on the table. And then seeing the Leviathan Dreadnought in this picture, obviously a Legion, a Heresy Death Guard, anyway, I'm pumped. And I know no one's talked about the Pox Walkers, you know, and how what they're going to do or whatever. Not because we don't know, really, other than what we got spoiled by the faction focus on the Death Guard, which is kind of neat. They're getting some very interesting rules that I think that are they're getting rules that make sense for Nurgle. And I think that's what they kind of struggled with over the generations of how do they farm out the universal special rules to the Chaos Legions and have them still be unique and yet still have some kind of function on the table.
The functionality is pretty much all we can ask for when we have such obvious choices in this edition for take this, don't take this. The ability to take the cool things that we want to play with is just it's going to make or break the new edition.
I think that's probably where we're going is that they're not bound to these universal special rules anymore. They can make each unit unique and more representative of what in our mind we think the unit should be doing without being handcuffed by this set of universal special rules in the rulebook.
I just see magnet sales skyrocketing all across the world. Like every model that has multiple weapons is just going to get magnetized now.
Well, there's going to be some people that I know that do magnetizing work for me that are going to be very happy and a little bit wealthier because let me tell you what, guys, my magnet game is not great. I am really, really good at breaking everything I try and attach magnets to.
Yeah, I walked over to my buddy's house one time and he's like, "You like my Riptide?" I was like, "Yeah." And he just took his hand and slammed it on the top of it. And the thing fell apart into like a million pieces. I was like, "What did you do?" And he's like, "Check it out. I magnetized this." So he magnetized every piece of his Riptide so that it will all fold down and store into one of those 1-inch pieces of foam. And he doesn't ever worry about dropping it because when he drops it, it all just falls apart and goes back together. It's like a Lego Riptide.
My Storm Raven is my Blood Angel Storm Raven. The first one I did is magnetized in a very similar way. And the look on people's faces when I just like flip it, you know, hit it by the wing, and the wing it flips and it falls into like five pieces.
They're like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." Yeah, you should buy me a beer.
I wish that something like that could exist for Fire Raptors because this guy I was playing next to at the LVO, his Fire Raptor just fell right off the table and shattered like into a million pieces. And it was heartbreaking.
Magnets ain't going to save resin, buddy.
Sorry. Nope. Nope.
The Death Guard are going to keep their kind of ignore injury mechanic. So they're not calling it feel no pain in the faction focus. They're specifically referring to it as disgustingly resilient with their own rules. So you know maybe you've got to save each wound instead of just ignoring the hit itself.
Yeah, and I imagine that for all of those that have that sort of feel no painish mechanic now, like say Death Company, are going to have a similar mechanic. And it will be really cool to be able to use that against weapons that before we weren't able to use it against.
Yeah, I think you're right on that because the instant death is now seemingly non-existent.
I'm pretty glad about that. I'm kind of happy to see the instant death rule go away and a lot of this stuff, even, you know, instant death's gone, D is gone. You know, there's these weapons out there now that are going to almost kind of sort of cause the same effects, but for the most part, you have a chance now against a lot of stuff instead of, you know, the way it used to be. Instant death, just, oh, you're cool, awesome character. Oh, wait, he died to my strength 8 weapon. So I'm glad to see stuff like that go away.
I know we spent a lot of time talking about the Hellforge Leviathan Dreadnought, but we focused on it so much because of the new concepts that have been introduced in this article. And that's what we've seen in all of them. The article may be about or maybe titled about one specific thing, but if you really look deep into it, you can start to kind of piece everything together. And, you know, it's almost like we could play the game right now. You know, if we knew what the stats of things were.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a buddy that has taken what they know and has, you know, played a few test games already. I mean, I'm sure it was mostly guesswork, but he said it was a lot of fun.
Hey, that's cool, though. All right, well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about more of some of the actual, like, bits of rules and stuff that we've got, like transport vehicles and close combat weapons and stuff like that. This is, you know, it's all been cool stuff. We'll see you in a minute.
Forged Narrative is brought to you by Dicehead.com. www.dicehead.com. Games, hob supplies, and comics. They have it all.
Hey everybody, we are back. I'm still Paul. I got Ricky and Chris.
Round two.
Transporting you to a new segment.
Oh, look what you did there. Good job, buddy.
Tied it together. Thanks for hanging out after the break. I have heard from folks on Twitter that the Player FM app doesn't broadcast the whole show. It only broadcasts like the first half or half of the show. So I apologize. If you're listening on that app and you're hearing us now, you made it.
So we should just front load all the good content for the first half of the show.
Well, I don't use that app, so I can't troubleshoot. And of course, I mean, they just pick up the feed on their own. So if you are listening and you're having trouble with any of your apps, you can go to forgethenarrative.net and subscribe to that. And it is in iTunes. And if you have an RSS feed that you, like just a service that grabs RSS feed for you, you can subscribe to the .net also and grab the feed.
Yep. Good call.
But if you are someone that has trouble, hit us up on Facebook and let me know, and I'll do what I can. I can't promise with some of these other third party stuff, but I just wanted to let you know that we are listening, at least to what you say, and we'd like to help with the solution if that comes up for you guys.
For sure.
So transports. Chris was trying to be sly. I didn't want to run over a Segway because that was pretty slick.
In Soviet Russia, Segway runs over you.
Transport's going to be working a lot differently now. I mean, you know, with the Rhino Rush, real popular in third edition. Then,
my favorite.
And then they've been, like, beat back, you know, with flamethrowers and machetes. Like, the idea of that assault is bad and getting into close combat is, you know, a fool's errand. That's really what the editions have been telling us.
Yeah, no more.
How does it work now?
So transports are interesting in that there's no more of these mechanics about, well, if you move, you can only move so far and people get out, or if you don't move, people can get out and then you can move in the other direction. Now it's just straight up units disembark at the start of the movement phase before the transport moves, but then can move, shoot, and fight normally in that turn. So that's every transport. That isn't assault vehicles. That's things like however drop pods are going to work, but rhinos, whatever those weird truck things that the gene stealer cult drive are called.
Goliath.
Of course, Goliath.
I think they're called Goliath.
I think it's a Massey Ferguson or John Deere or something. It's a tractor. Who we kidding?
Yeah. Well, I mean, David already broke it. So any transport at all, you can get out. Move, charge, or move, shoot, and charge, depending on your guns or however that's going to work.
As long
you can
as
do
it
all those
has
things
not
now.
Moved itself. As long as it's the beginning of the movement phase, you can choose to disembark.
Mm-hmm. So this isn't the sort of thing that you can do. Is like, all right, I'm going to move up my full, like the example they give is a Star Weaver, one of the Harlequin transports. 16-inch move on that bad boy. You can't move up 16 and then get out. You got to do it first.
You got to play a little risky with it. You've got to go to where you think you're going to want to get out to position yourself to do a charge.
Now, what my favorite part about this is especially for those of us who have typically faster vehicles, I mean, Blood Angels in particular, everybody's expecting me to say this because of who I am. But the fact that our rhinos historically have been able to get up the field further, it always sucked in 7th edition because you could, yeah, sure, you could flat out and go, you know, full 24 inches or whatever, but you would lose your rhino the next turn, and then your dudes would just sit there after I got blown up and be like, well, hi, I can't charge you. Shoot me for a turn.
Yeah, like they're they've never been gotten out of a rhino before. You know, that's
like, oh, hey, look at that. Hey, have you seen that? That's some interesting architecture. Like, no, just go get them, boys.
Well, let's not have this be undersold too, that the vehicles now have the same stats, same behavior, and same rules as infantry models. So these, like the rhino. Or the Chimera, this is what I see happening a lot, and I mentioned this in one of those reaction videos, is that you could, like say, vets, IG vets, Astra Militarum vets, with all their good shooting weapons, they go up, get out of the Chimera, shoot their guns, The Chimera charges the whatever unit to basically run as a blocker. So it possibly ties up a unit to prevent it from being able to shoot and or assault the vet squad that just got out.
And that can be useful even for setting up another charge. Now you get your dudes out of your transport, you charge for the transport first, it eats the Overwatch, and if it makes it into combat, because yes, you know, I'm going to be giving you a freaking tire burn to your face with whatever wheeled vehicles and, you know, whatever tracks do to people, it's not pretty. But it's going to happen. And then your valuable unit, the one that's going to do the damage, is going to charge in after that, say, from the Overwatch fire.
And I liked how the Star Weaver had stats, like its combat stats, its close combat stats, were representative of the people that are piling in.
Yep.
I think one kind of downside to this new method, though, is that, you know, before the vehicle could move up, you know, the assault vehicles could move up six, the guys could get out, you know, they're six, and then they could charge. So now it looks like we're going to lose a little bit of that because you're going to have to be parked there, and then on the next turn, they're going to get out and move their movement and then charge. So I think we'll lose a little bit of movement on the charge.
Let's think about this, though. We haven't seen the full stats of one of these vehicles. We've only seen the stat line. We haven't seen any of the keywords and what the special rules. Look how far they've been willing to push it on the full data slates that we've seen so far.
Yeah, and you know, I think the disembarkation rules are going to matter, like, you know, how far they disembark and stuff like that. I get that we don't see that, but just
what
based
does an
off
open top vehicle mean? What is a previous vehicle that had the assault vehicle rule? What does that mean? You know, there's going to be things that I think that will have, you know, better rules that are going to be better at the job you're talking about than any old generic vehicle.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Paul, because I imagine that things that had assault ramps in the past are going to provide some kind of bonus to getting up there and being able to make that charge.
Yeah, it could be anything from extra charge distance, a re-roll of a charge, or more attacks on the charge. There could be, I mean, they can really do whatever flavor they want to throw in with it.
Maybe it lets you advance in charge.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There could be
whatever they want. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're willing to do it is what it seems like. And that's the cool thing. So one of the other big things in this article is that the transport capacity of the vehicle is all that matters for putting people inside. So let's say it holds 10. You could put 10 heroes in there.
Yep.
Or three-man squads.
Yeah. That's my favorite thing about it is that I don't have to, you know, try to finagle stuff or get extra transports just to carry this or that. So now you can have, you know, you come up with some crazy combination of characters in a squad or something and throw in a servitor and a, you know, from a tech marine here and there and all this junk. So now they can all just get in there. So, you know, before trying to
it's less tech bookkeeping, marine with a few it's servitors. Less of a ticky-tack thing. It's less of something nonsensical because on the battlefield, you know, if a tank's driving by and it's got a spot in it, and even though from another squad, I'm probably jumping in.
Yeah, I'm not going to be like, no, buddy, you're second squad. Beat it. Actually, I'm in the military. People would do that. Yeah,
I know they would.
No, I know. I yeah,
gut check. Nope.
I've done that to other platoons before, so I know we would do that. I take that back.
Here's another thing you got to keep in mind, though, is if you have 10 heroes in one transport, what happens when you pull that one?
Yeah, it does. Now it's very. You don't take an armor save. You are just dead.
Yep, you roll a d6 for every unit, and then you allocate wounds. But if it is a one model unit, you allocate the wound to the one model, and he's dead. It's not takes a wound. It is unit is dead.
Yeah, no,
that's
kind
of scary.
Yeah, you remove the model. That's I think that's how they're saying it here. And this is that is scary. That's very scary.
High risk, high reward. Hopefully.
Yeah, right. And you know, I don't foresee many situations where you would put 10 characters in something like a Rhino. I don't know that would happen, but at least there is this trade-off because now it seems like these vehicles are going to have they're going to be more than just one turn of defense for the unit inside. Now, and that's all they've been, you know, people got them, you know, because they were free in a lot of formations that you saw, or they just got them to give them one round of defense against some overwhelming firepower.
Here's another thing, too, is with the stratagems, the generic stratagem, there's one that lets you re-roll a die. It's like, oh, I'm spending command point. I just rolled a one for my Terminator captain or, you know, whoever's the big bad. I'm just going to use a command point to save them. So that also gives you just that little bit of insurance against bad luck. It won't help you against the super bad luck, because we know that there are people out there who roll two ones in a row. I mean, there's the Phantom Inch helped your charging problem, Paul, but I don't know if there's any insurance for this kind of thing.
Oh, it's only going to be a matter of time before my luck adjusts to that Phantom Inch. Like, look,
adaptive luck.
Yeah, it fooled us for a little bit, Mr. Murphy, but now enjoy your 3 months of assaulting. Now it's all over.
Karma has realigned.
Oh, have we talked about close combat weapons yet, speaking of assault?
Not today. I don't even know anymore. Like, honestly, it feels like... when did we last record? Was that a week ago?
That was like 3 weeks ago, I'm pretty sure.
Was it? It feels like...
actual, like, man hours, it was probably
the article for Close Combat Weapon came out on Friday, so I know we recorded before that drop.
Okay, so we have not discussed this.
But I mean, that's what we're talking about. Like, this article feels like it was forever ago now with how we're getting this information.
Lost all concept of time.
Yeah. The Close Combat Weapons... It gives us rules for power axe, power sword, and the power staff. Power maul. And the power axe, you know, it's maybe going to take a back seat now. A plus one strength, a negative two to armor save with one damage. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the power sword, which, you know, we didn't take it specifically because it couldn't get through armor. Now it's just the strength of the user, but it's a minus three to your save.
You know, I had this really big debate with somebody. I don't know if I'd call it really big, but I had a debate with somebody about the armor crunching power of an axe versus a sword. And I'm actually really okay with how this works, because when it comes to an axe, you're not looking to have a sharp edge or a point that cleaves through armor.
It's not a finesse weapon.
No, you want it to bend the helmet so that the concussion kills the person inside, because the skull's not shaped like that. So I it feels okay for me, and I think that there's still going to be circumstances, like, for example, sergeants in a guard platoon or whatever, where that plus one strength is going to make a difference, and that minus to the armor save is going to sacrifice a little bit.
Plus one strength is actually going to make that much of a difference. Now, this is just me. I'm cynical of the five. I'm cynical of that five category on the die to wound.
Right, but it's better than the six category, and if that plus one strength puts most of your threat range in the fives instead of the six, that's a benefit right there.
Okay, I'm with you.
My biggest thing is just look at those weapons. Look at how, you know, versatile the power weapons are now. Like, and there's no right answer in any of these. It's, you know, hey, that power axe is going to, you know, be a little better here and a little stronger here, but the power sword is going to cut through everything but not be as strong. I love that now you can take any of these weapons and they're all going to be situationally very good. And I think that's the good thing we got going with power weapons now, is that, you know, they all shine in their own way.
Yeah, I'm over here just wringing my hands with all these Grey Knight models on my shelf.
Oh, gosh.
Man. Grey Knights are loving this.
We know
force
weapons are going to do D3 wounds, and they all come with force weapons, and most of them are power swords.
Yeah.
Halberd plus two equals everything. Dead dudes.
Yeah, okay. So the chainsword, the weapon that's,
you know, I love this.
The trusty weapon of every assault marine, you know, good and bad, heretic and loyalist, the chainsword. Now
even striking scorpions.
True. So each time the bearer fights, it can make one additional attack with this weapon. One damage.
That's fantastic.
I love it.
I want to point something out.
Oh, go ahead.
With the way that close combat's changing, where you're no longer getting the two weapon bonus, there's been conversation out there. It's like, well, it's actually a wash because you lose the attack from two weapons. It's like, no, you don't, because you have a pistol that shoots in the shooting phase before anybody gets to swing at you. Like, you're getting an extra attack just by having the chainsword.
And we don't know that pistol rule isn't going to say that you can use that in close combat. You don't know yet.
Yep, that is also a thing, because let's be real, Ricky. I have melt a pistol sergeants that are really excited about kneecapping some knights.
I am going to just stand back and shoot you with my ridiculous thermal cannon.
The power fist, we got the stats for that in the article also. And the neat thing about this is that it's not unwieldy anymore. Now, well, it is, but it just translates into a minus one to hit.
It's like, oh, that big thing's coming at me. Let's move. Yeah, it makes sense. It would be harder to hit you with it.
Yeah.
But now I think it behaves a lot more like we imagine Power Fist to behave, and more about how they write Power Fist to behave, which is kind of scary to say. Someone pinch me, something behaves more like it's written about in stories.
That's what we're seeing with lots of this stuff. But, you know, and I was kind of bummed with the fact that it's only minus three save and then D3 on the damage. But then I thought, well, they need somewhere to go with the Thunderhammer.
Yep. We had this conversation, didn't we, Paul?
Yeah.
And, so that's fantastic.
What do you guys think the Thunderhammer is going to do? Just looking at the Power Fist, what are you saying that I'm going to see when I see a Thunderhammer?
I think we're going to see a bigger AP, and I think we're probably going to see like a D6 damage instead of a D3. And the reason I say that is because concussion isn't going to matter anymore, right?
Well,
you're not.
Well, Chris, if I can jump in there, that's where, you know, if we saw on the Dreadnought, the Leviathan Dreadnought, it said if you are a vehicle, Titanic, or whatever, then it's five damage. I bet we see something like that in the Thunderhammer. Is it Thunderhammer, maybe D3?
I wouldn't be surprised.
It could be D3, yeah. But it's straight up three on vehicles or something. I mean,
yeah. Something
the,
like
the creative
that.
Possibilities are much bigger now. It feels like that door swings open a little bit more and they have a lot more leverage to sort of fine tune. Like, this is what we want this weapon to do. This is what, you know, this is what this is designed for. And we're not just, you know, they're of course not stuck in this mindset of, you know, stats can't be higher than 10 and all that stuff.
Can we talk about the important weapon now? The Reaper Chainsword? Can we talk about that?
Let's talk about
talk
that.
About that yeah.
Thanks, guys. All right. The Reaper Chainsword. What is it? D3 damage is good, but if you really want to kill something, try the Reaper Chainsword. Deals a flat 6 damage to whatever it wounds. That's it.
Seems good.
It's going to be fantastic. So I am going to make buzzsaw noises and walk my knights wherever I want because they're no longer locked in combat by infantry. And then I will just use my chainsword on everything.
How cool is that? Is that they're now we don't know what that means. If you can walk over them, walk out, do you ignore them for movement? How does that we don't know what that means yet? But I think it's really cool that you're not gonna get bogged down because that was one of the things I do on the regular. It's like, okay, there's a Wraith Knight over there and he thinks he's gonna take the relic. Nope, I'm just gonna go lock him down with 40 zombies.
Yep. And he can't shoot, can't do anything. And now it says that Imperial Knights, I don't know about, you know, Wraith Knights and stuff, but I imagine they're gonna be able to. This one says they can simply walk over infantry models and leave combat while still being able to fire their weapons. That is huge for an Imperial Knight player. You know, so first off, these, you know, D's gone, big deal, no big loss, it's good for the game. But knocking out 6 damage for every time I hit, and then I'm just going to walk wherever I want. You're not locking me in, and I'm going to shoot my guns in my shooting phase, even if I stay in there fighting. That's awesome.
I'm sure that the elfy ballerina dancers will be able to use some sort of jumpy, skippy doo-ha to get out. But, you know, if Paul is intelligent about his zombie placement, maybe you don't give them enough room to make that full move.
Yeah, just place them to where they can't get out or something. I don't, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that rule works. Yeah. I wonder if it's going to say you move them and they just have to move out of the way or what. So it'll be interesting to see. But, I mean, I'm fine being stuck in as long as I still get to shoot my guns. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And no blast markers that I'm going to hit myself with that thermal cannon. That's awkward when that happened. So I'm pretty pumped about that.
I wish I could say that never happened to me either, but it did.
I lost the tournament in Knoxville one time. I was doing pretty okay. And I was like, all I need is for this thermal cannon to hit. And then it scattered 6 inches and hit my other knight in the back. Didn't have shields there. Blew up my own knight with my own thermal cannon. Lost the game. It was great.
Risk versus reward.
It would have been great. It would have been in a very clutch moment, but it was not. So otherwise, it was a fun trip.
The finishing move segment this week is going to be about points for painting. And the reason I'm mentioning that, but first let me get into it, is that the finishing move segment is sponsored by Frontline Gaming. You know, they've been a sponsor of us now for a while, and we're really happy to have them on board. And we talk about this a lot, you know, support the folks that support the things that you like. So if you've made it, you know, 45 minutes into the show, hopefully that's enough to at least check out the Frontline Gaming website where they've got their FLG mats, their terrain, information on the ITC tournament circuit, and their web store. I mean, the quality guys, you probably know who they are. It's worth checking out their establishment.
Absolutely. Those guys, they're full bore, 100%, full steam ahead, supporting the hobby in so many ways. And we're very happy to be able to talk about them on the show.
So with specific conversation about points for hobby and painting, now we talk in the finishing move segment a lot about how to do those extra steps on your models to spend 15, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, sometimes, heck, sometimes even less on your models to get that extra notice. Maybe it's just a checkbox on a rubric. Maybe it's so somebody walking by 3 feet away will look and stop and say, "Hey man, nice army."
Yeah,
that's better than a win, in my opinion, is when somebody comes by and compliments me on my army. Because, you know, let's be honest, at the end of the day, I put about, what, like 10 hours into the tournament and actually playing. But somebody complimenting my army, that's complimenting, like, you know, how many hundreds of hours or whatever that you spend. So, yeah, I'm all about getting that little attaboy.
No kidding. So with the ITC being what it is, which is a ranking for tournament performance nationally, internationally as well, people competing for overall wins in the ITC and competing for faction wins within their various brackets. And, you know, so we could be competing for the best Blood Angel player, Knight player, Tau player, Corsairs, whatever, the whole thing. If you're not familiar with the ITC, that's what it is. It is a series of tournaments that people attend to get points that all contribute to their annual ranking for overall and faction-based. Is that a fair description?
It's a great excuse to talk a lot of trash to your friends. So that's my favorite part about it.
Any of this stuff like this encourages participation. And so with that in mind, what I've been helping them do is put together a track for the hobby side of it as well. So not only, well, does the ITC track tournament performance, just win, you know, your wins and your overall cumulative wins over the course of a season, it will soon, hopefully, also track your hobby scores. And so not only can you compete for, I'm going to use Blood Angels as the example, the best Blood Angel tournament player, you could also be competing for the best appearance as a Blood Angel player.
The thing that I like the most about this is that it's another way that we can reward people who appreciate the hobby in different ways. I mean, on Forge Narrative, we're all about, like, bring your A game to every part of your army. You know, that could be display board, that can be paint job, that's the game you play on the table, the way you treat your opponent. But in the community, sometimes it's a little bit undersold how important the hobby aspect is. And the people that want to compete for that, yeah, maybe they're not playing to win the tournament, but their effort in putting their army together deserves recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. So this will not replace, will specifically not replace how any organizer wants to reward painting awards. Everything is completely up to the organizer as well. But let me tell you what the first draft will be up for viewing soon. And what it was compiled between all the major events. There's a Facebook group for ITC tournament organizers. You've heard us talk about it on the show before, but it's a pretty active group. If you run even the smallest ITC event, you're welcome in the group. It's managed by the guys that manage the ITC circuit for Frontline Gaming. So getting added is not an issue, but all the major organizers, there was an active discussion and people were posting up what their rubrics were, what their criteria were for awarding best painted in their area at their major events. So the task was essentially to kind of prime the pump. I primed it with several questions that we used at the FTN seasonal events and then translated and migrated into things that were used at Warzone Atlanta, and then got things from things like the Nova Open, LVO. All these things factored into getting, and I'm mentioning names that you recognize, but everyone who posted up what their criteria was for best paint got factored into what I believe are 20 very much objective questions, 10 focused just on painting, 5 on hobby, and then 5 on display and theme.
And objective is the operative word, right? The goal for that, of course, art, anything to do with art, we could have 3 weeks just talking about how some art, some people like better than others. But there are certain yes or no questions that you can create to ask about what someone's done with their army. And those sorts of things are the things that we want to focus on the most with the hobby track.
One of the directives here, I think, was to not force people into painting a certain way. That was one of the missions, I think, that we all kind of agreed on before we went into this endeavor, is to not force people down a certain path of painting, like, you know, 3-color minimum. You know, try to avoid some of those old tropes, that because that art really is. It's a huge universe of things that all boil down into what is a good looking army. And I know that the tournaments have kind of gone past, well, you match the rubric, so you're going to win the tournament for painting. You know, it's still going to come down to the judge's choice. This is not about limiting a judge's ability to, or a tournament organizer specifically's ability to award the best painted. This is simply to create a uniform thing that can be tracked alongside tournament scores to also crown hobby participation winners throughout the season.
I mentioned it to a buddy of mine when you and I were talking about it. I mentioned it to a friend about like that this was in the process and like, you know, because he's real big in painting and I was kind of wanting to gauge his reaction to it. And he is like super pumped. He's not a tournament player. And now he's like excited to go to tournaments because now he feels like his contribution to the hobby is going to be rewarded. And, you know, he can compete kind of nationally now just by going to events and seeing how he stacks up to the other attendees, you know, to the other painters out there. So it's going to generate excitement. I think it's going to definitely help those some people out there who don't necessarily get motivated to paint. I think it's going to help motivate those guys to bring the best army that they can to the tournaments too. So,
and I mean, we pulled lots of different everyone was free to contribute. We got T-Shift, Wogfest, Planes of War. I mean, any large tournament that you've heard of or considered it, probably even attended if you're listening to the show, they've had the opportunity to get into this and contribute their ideas. And everyone's been very, they responded to very well.
Yeah, I'm pretty eager to use it. I'm hoping that we'll see this on Best Coast Pairings as well, so that I can go through and just be click the buttons down it for each player.
One stop shop style. Yeah,
that will make it super easy. So
I don't code, but I will say, I don't want to like say this has happened or already, but I can tell you that they are also very keen to do that, to where you may even get an opportunity to see the pictures of the armies that are the top categories of whatever faction. Like there'll be a place you'll be able to get to view the pictures also.
Well, Best Coast Pairings, you can already, you know, take a picture of the list and that'll populate that way. So I don't see that as a stretch at all, that I, as a tournament organizer, I can pull my camera out and take a picture of it and, you know, and post it just like I would post their list to Best Coast Pairings and let people pull it up and see it. That'd be super cool.
Again, this is not me trying to say how people should use this whenever, because I mean, this will be put up for review and people will get, I mean, it needs to go through another draft, I think, probably to kind of make it almost like foolproof, in my opinion. But right now, once this goes up, I think there will be ways for people to have it apply it to however their tournament is scored. So you could either take it for, you know, right off the rack and use it as it is, or those check boxes will simply equate to a certain amount of points in your own tournament scale, and then you could use it that way. Or just make sure you check the boxes in Best Coast Pairings, and then still do your own paint however you want in your own event.
Yeah, I think that was my big concern when you had first mentioned this to me, is how is that going to affect my events? But the fact that it doesn't affect my event is fantastic. So I can run my event however I want, and really it's just I owe it to the player. As a tournament organizer, I own it to the player, if I'm reporting to ITC, to go ahead and knock out this rubric for them so that they can get their points. So if that doesn't, it can, or it doesn't have to affect the way I run my tournament. So it's just a little extra step to entice, participation in that aspect of the hobby. And, you know, I can still run my tournament how I want to. So, great.
This is real talk here for a second. Beautiful armies at your tournament means you'll have more people the next time you run the tournament.
Yeah.
It's true. It's absolutely true. Good models on the table is a fun experience for everybody. It's a good experience for you with the satisfaction that, hey, I did this. This is cool. I'm getting rewarded for it. It's cool for your opponent because now they have this cinematic competitive game that they're playing. It's so much better than the Grey Legion.
Yeah, for real, man. So again, this is still a little bit in its infancy, but the major events have responded well to the idea that this is something that could be tracked going forward. And I think we may be able to get it implemented for this season, and certainly, you know, off to the races once 8th edition hits.
Yeah, I would like to see it like as soon as 8th hits, I would love to be able to just start running it with my tournaments. I'd be super pumped to do that.
Yeah, hopefully it gets that far. Again, it's the draft is there, and you guys have seen it. You guys can give me some feedback. If anybody is curious about this and you want to get in on the discussion and you do run tournaments for the ITC and you're already a member of the group, check it out. If you are in the group, you can search hobby in that group and you'll find it pretty quickly. If you have any questions or even have some contributing ideas, we'd love to hear them about them on the Forward the Narrative Facebook or on Twitter or whatever. Please hit us up, because again, this is, I want to make it clear that this is not our ideas of how it should be done. We're trying to build a consensus with everyone that does this, you know, on the regular. Has to deal with this and be accountable for it at the local level.
Yeah, ultimately, everything that we're doing is for the good of the hobby and the most, you know, what we can do that will make the most people happy and help people appreciate everything that this hobby has to offer. We want to serve them.
I think the big takeaway from it, though, is that it's not penalizing people who don't adhere to this painting rubric. If you didn't care about it before enough to paint your models, it's not going to affect you in any way. It's a separate scoring system. So if you're still in it just for the wins, to get the highest points you can, you know, at the best gray knight player in America, you know, from a competitive standpoint, your painting points is not going to affect that. So it doesn't hurt you, but it just gives other people an additional way to participate and compete in the hobby.
Yeah, man. I think that's probably the best way to phrase it. We'll close out on that. This has been fun. It's been fun to see everyone's ideas and to really look objectively at their painting rubrics, you know, because this is one of those things that everyone feels like they had the best way to skin the cat. And every single one of them had a great idea, and trying to boil it down into 20 questions is not easy. It may go higher than 20 questions. It may go lower than 20 questions. I don't know what the actual revised thing to be, but this will be floated out to get consensus before it gets implemented, of course. But then the idea is to adopt it for tracking hobby points and have it also be easy to implement through the Best Coast Pairing app.
Awesome.
No, guys, that's all I got for tonight. I mean, I know we talked a lot about that one model, but there's so much on that data slate. Not to mention, you know, that we know that we're getting the two Marine books from Forge World right out of the gate, the Heretics and the Loyalist.
It's a great time to be playing 40K, guys.
Absolutely. And that model is a fantastic barometer for what we can expect of so many other models in the game. So I don't feel too bad talking about it the entire show.
You know, it's so cool. I'm going to be in Nottingham June 17th. That happens to be the day the 40K 8th edition is released.
Probably going to have you pick up a few things for me while you're there.
I am very excited about that. I think it's going to be just a madhouse. I mean, I'm going to try to capture as much of the enthusiasm going there at Warhammer World as possible and post that up to our Facebook page and Twitter and stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to a midnight release party, like a full all-nighter game fest with the new rules on the 17th. There's tons of stuff going on in my area. It's really cool to see all everybody pull together for it. So
yeah, we're gonna try to have one at midnight in Gate City. So the town where everybody's asleep by 9 o'clock, we're gonna be up at midnight.
You better alert the authorities. So
yeah, better. Yeah. Sadly, I probably should. Yeah.
What ruckus is going on here?
What in tarnations is this?
Well, guys, thanks for talking with me tonight. No, and you know, we're going to be, you know, who knows what we're going to get in between now and next week to talk about. But I can imagine that we're going to have some pretty good shows coming up with all the content we can expect to see.
Yep. Keep your ears open, folks.
Night. Good night.